Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Psychovertical podcast. I'm Andy Kirkpatrick, and I apologise for having a bit of a gap. I'm currently in Oman, and I've just come here from... I was in Saudi Arabia. As you probably can tell, like, everyone's like losing their shit everywhere all over the planet, so... So I'm kind of, I've gone mobile, I'm like Tom Cruise, anybody who's listening to this podcast, you know I have this thing about, like, don't watch the news, don't consume media kind of stuff, and, you can see why, really, basically. It's probably best not to talk about the whole what's going on, because it's so ridiculous. But I'm not sure where we're gonna go actually after our visa runs out here. We only have a 10-day visa here. Might have to go back to Ireland or back somewhere else, because it's actually getting quite hard to get visas to get into some countries, or to get back to where we were living. You have to go to quarantine and things, and it's all very bizarre. But onto the subject of climate related stuff. I haven't got very long to talk because Vanessa's just gone out for a run, so I have to have this done before she comes back. So this podcast, in this one, I'm just going to talk about some sort of gear related questions some people have sent me over the last few weeks. Just do a few. First one this morning, someone asked me what kind of stove I recommend for kind of traveling around and climbing and things. And the stove I'm using at the moment is your classic MSR. What's it called these days? The Whisperlite International, which is, you know, your classic. You know, MSR make all sorts of stoves. You've got the reactor and all those, you know, the gas kind of stoves, and the XGK, whatever it's called now. You know, it's the super one. I've been using an XGK forever. That's probably the fuel stove I've been using the longest, and I've had about, you know, I had one that somehow was like squashed completely flat. It was like someone took it out of my bag when it was going through customs, and the people had just jumped up and down on it to squash it flat, which sometimes happens. You always have to be really careful with stoves. Like, you always want to make sure they're very, very clean when they're going in, you checked luggage. Because some people get really, they don't like anything that's all stove like, unless it's in a box and it's brand new, to be going through customs. So there's a good chance that I think I was going through a thing. I flew through like Turkey and Malaysia on that trip, and when I got to the end and I got the stove out the bag, it was just flat, basically, like someone had driven over it with a truck. So maybe just got a big hammer and just like squash it. So if you're going to take a stove on a plane, I would recommend you really, really clean it, like, you know, really, really clean. Make sure there's no smell of fuel in it whatsoever. I often get a big bottle of Coke, like 2 liters of Coke, and just stick it in a bucket or something, and just put loads of Coke on it and submerge it. And the Coke often helps to sort of clean off all the, because, you know, if you put like a tooth in a glass of Coke, it'll like basically dissolve it. So, you know, clean up the bottle as well. It's often worth covering the bottle so it doesn't look like it doesn't have like MSR fuel bottle written on the side of it, because again, like, there's a chance your fuel bottle will be taken out and disposed of, and then you won't have a fuel bottle, which is problematic. But the stove I've been using most of the last few years has actually been the Whisperlite International, and the reason for that is you can basically anywhere in the world, the fuel you want to be using is petrol, like unleaded petrol. And when we're in Africa, if you weren't using petrol, we were using like paraffin, also because we had the XGK in Africa, and did we use diesel? But we basically used like petrol. We used paraffin. We had some white gas, some sort of aviation style kind of fuel. We even used some sort of cleaning. There's some sort of cleaning product you can buy in. I think we had it in Namibia. We used that as well. But generally, what you want to do is just use petrol, and you want to have, like, ideally, if you're somewhere in a country for like a long time, you want to buy like a proper petrol, one of those plastic petrol can things that you use. That people always use when they run out of petrol, go to the petrol station and buy one. Just get one of those and you fill it full of petrol and just use that. And it's like here, like in Saudi Arabia, like petrol is like, you can fill your whole car up and it probably costs like 15 quid or something, if that. So if you haven't got one of those big plastic bottles, you can just, you just use a big plastic, like a two, you just use a, one of those large, is it 20 litre? You get those, not 20 litres, like 5 litres. Those big, the big bottles of water you can buy in these countries. And because they have quite a large cap on them. So you see a lot of people like using them. But you have to be careful if you're putting fuel in that kind of thing. Because I think, I've got a feeling that it might dissolve itself out of there or something. So, and whenever you're dealing with fuel, you always have to, obviously, fuel is like massively combustible, so you got to be really, it's got to be safe with it. You don't want it like spilling out anywhere. It's true that if you fire a bullet into a car, into a petrol tank, it's not going to blow up like in the films. But petrol is like super combustible. Like it's pretty dangerous stuff. So ideally, you want to have like a proper container to put it in. And what else? I tend to find that, I don't know if it's my imagination, but I feel like petrol seems to run, it seems to use more petrol than white gas. White gas seems to be, well, it's the most efficient kind of fuel to run your stove on. And it's very clean, where petrol and other things aren't as clean, like paraffin's not as clean. So you might need to clean your stove more often. How would that manifest itself in your stove is it's not necessarily that the stove is going to stop working, which that can happen, is you just want to, if you've got like, so the Whisperlite International has like a small, like a shaker jet inside it, which is like a little ball with a pin in it. And if you shake it, the pin like goes up and down, and it kind of makes it cleans out the, where the vapor's like being expelled from the stove where you light it. So you sometimes need to just give that a shake every now and again, turn it upside down, and it's very rare you have to actually dismantle the stove to really deal with it. It's like, I'd always recommend, even if you've got a stove with a shaker jet, you should always carry a couple of those really small prickers that you can get for cleaning out a stove, because they're really handy, and the prickers are also do get broken, the pricker bit falls off, so I don't weigh anything, so I always carry a few of those. And the reason I use a Whisperlite International is some people seem to think you can beef Wellington on it, or do a souffle on it. Like, I don't find it like massively controllable, but it is definitely, an XGK is basically it's on or it's off. And that's about it, really. You can get like, you can an XGK, you can sort of turn it down, so you just have this like tiny little sort of pilot light. But once the pressure goes down in the stove, that will probably go out anyway. So it's so a Whisperlite has a little bit more control over it, but not a huge amount. If you're a real cook, you want to get the Dragonfly, the MSR Dragonfly, which is, a lot more controllable. And the downside with the Dragonfly is it's just a little, it's got more bits that stick out in my experience. And I feel it's a little bit more easily, more temperamental. Like, I don't think I would use a Dragonfly for camping, but I wouldn't probably take it away on like a big trip or whatever. In terms of fuel supply, the chances of getting hold of any screw-on gas canisters, if you're taking a reactor or something, are pretty minimal, and like anywhere on the planet, basically. Unless you're in, like Australia or New Zealand or, Japan or, America, North America, it's very hard to find it. Like, if you're in like Patagonia or somewhere, or Argentina, you there might be, if there's a lot of people going there camping, then you might be able to get hold of that kind of stuff, but it's pretty rare to see those kind of gas canisters, and don't want to be flying with them, because people do fly with them, but it's like stupid, basically. Like, it's just not worth it. For me also, I find that the gas, like a compressed gas canister, is just temperamental, really. Like, if you're using gas canisters, which if you're in a country you don't really know anything about, then you can have problems with them. Like, sometimes there's a like an error, there's a manufacturing fault and they won't screw on properly, or the gas inside them is not what it's supposed to be, or it's poor quality or whatever. And the stoves themselves, like jet boils and all those kind of stuff, although they're very, very good for certain things, they're not that robust, I don't think. Like, I've had several problems with those kind of stoves, and other people have had problems with them where they just wouldn't work. Even some of the MSR ones. My reactor stove seems to have survived like a long time, and that seems to work. But I did have the other, like the MSR version of a Whisperlite, and that just stopped working for some reason. I don't know if it's because, so if they get like really, really hot or something, there's something happens to them. But anyway, so that's the good. And the other good thing about Whisperlite in using a fuel stove is it will work in like any conditions from, plus 50, minus 50. It's not affected really by the cold. The only thing that's affected by the cold is the pump. So you, like, if you're going anywhere super, super cold, like sort of, super Arctic kind of temperatures, then I would always recommend that you take the pump out of the stove and put in a plastic bag and keep the pump inside your sleeping bag with you at all times, and never leave the pump like in the bottle when you're carrying it or whatever. This is when it's super super cold, because what can happen is all the seals don't work as well, and then the fuel can actually leak out of the bottle. Even if you've got it's screwed on and you've got the things closed in, like fuel seems to be able to leak out of the bottle, because it just the tolerances sort of change or whatever. And I'd always carry like a spare pump as well, because the pump is generally the thing that might get broken in really cold temperatures. I've seen like the plunger break or whatever, and like Primus and those guys, like, I've not really ever used apart from like 30 years ago, I not really used a Primus stuff, and people tell me they're really good, but just because I've used MSR stoves for such a long time, I seem to know how they work, really. So they seem to work for me. They tend to work really well, and they're probably like the number one stove that people are using. But it's good to, you know, the more you use them, the more you understand. Like, you can generally can hear, like, you want the when the fuel is coming, when the stove is running, you want like a, if you you want the sound to be like a constant sound, you want a constant pressure of the thing, like coming, the gas like coming out. When it starts like sounding like a steam engine, like it starts making this very, very subtle sometimes, it means that there isn't enough pressure in the thing. Or if it's taking ages to boil the water, then generally what that means is that the valve is probably a little bit fouled up and there's not enough fuel coming out. So you're like, why is this water not boiling? And then you just get the stove and you give it a good shake, and the pricker comes up and pricks the hole, and suddenly like it bursts to life and there's loads of fuel coming through again, and it's nice and it works really well. A pressure on the stove, I think what MSR should do, they should bring out a fuel bottle that actually has a pressure gauge like built into it, so when you're pumping up the stove, you can sort of get an idea of what the ideal pressure needs to be. Because that's, at the moment, you just kind of, you know, pressurize it to what you think is enough, and you can use the pressure to actually adjust the heat coming out of the stove. But I tend to just really pressurize it, and then I think it's supposed to be 19 pumps when the bottles feel full, and that's a very small amount of space, so you might have to do like 60 100 pumps or something if there's not a lot of fuel in there. One thing I always recommend is to buy like a simmer ring. You can actually make a simmer ring just out of a lid of like a big lid, like a lid off a coffee lid, not the metal one, you know, like the big coffee tins, or a lid off a paint can. But a simmer ring is basically it's like a heat diffuser. It's like a big round piece of metal. It's not huge, anyway. There's different sizes, but it's like a piece of perforated metal that's got like, that is very, very thin. And what you do is you just put it over the flame, and it kind of diffuses the flame, so it makes it less. It's you don't have any hot spots, so it's very good if you're doing any sort of cooking where you like. The MSR stove's not too bad, but some stoves can actually create like a bit of a heat spot. So if you were like going to like heat some milk up for like hot chocolate or whatever, then you can often get like burn marks or whatever. But if you were making like an omelet, or you were making, you know, so you're making your souffle at the campsite, then having a heat diffuser ring is really good. And you can buy them off eBay, like super cheap. You can buy like a dedicated one. I think Backpacking Pantry, they used to make like an oven, like a folding oven, like fitted over the top of your stove out of some some highly, you know, heat resistant sort of material, and they in their kit you get like a heat diffuser rig in it, which is but you don't need to have like a dedicated one. You could just buy one of these like cheap, you know, cheap cheerful ones, about like $5, $10 online. And they have like a little, get the one that's got a little handle on it, because you want to be able to lift it on and off as you're cooking. And that's I'd say that's a good piece of kit to get hold of, because it doesn't weigh very much. In terms of traveling pan wise, we often it depends where we are. Sometimes we just, I generally always have a frying pan, and I'll usually buy that in the country, and then just give it to like a charity shop or whatever. Like, you often buy a lot of pans and things for eating in a charity shop. So if you're in Australia, in the US or whatever, you can just buy that kind of stuff, and it saves having to carry it across, you know, in your luggage. And you know, so I think like a full size frying pan is a good, and it's kind of handy. Like out here, like in the Middle East, you get a lot of like Arab sort of bread, which is like flat bread, and it's a bit, you know, but same with tortillas, same in the US. Like, it's always much nicer if you like heat it up. So you can like frying up with like butter as well is quite nice. We eat quite a lot of eggs when we're traveling, because eggs seem to last a really, really long time. And, you know, I often have like eggs, you know, eggs for breakfast, eggs, you know, eggs, fry eggs and tomatoes and halloumi and stuff. You'll be getting hungry now, and have that for like breakfast. And with this kind of Arab kind of bread. And then, you know, eggs are good. Like, you can buy like a huge tray of eggs for not a lot of money in most countries. And you can, you know, omelets are good, and is it carbonara or whatever it is, all that kind of stuff. It's good kind of stuff. And you can boil eggs up and have them for your lunch in the daytime and everything else. So at the moment we have like one pan. It's probably like a 2 liter pan and a frying pan, and that's it. And then we have like two cups, and you can pick if you're a dirtbag, you can pick up cups from, like, if you stay in a hotel or whatever, there'll often be cups in there, or you can buy like paper cups and just burn the paper cups in the fire. And the little metal cups are quite good. Like I think one of the best companies for pans and all that kind of stuff is Alpkit. They make a really good titanium pan, a large titanium cup. And that cup, actually, like on my reactor stove, I have the titanium cup I have fits inside the GSI plastic cup you can get, which is really, really good cup. And we have, I have that, and the handle's cut off it. So the GSI cup goes inside the reactor stove, and then the titanium cup goes inside the GSI cup. So it all kind of fits together like a Russian doll kind of thing. And that works really well. But it's quite having a metal cup that you can cook on is kind of handy, but you're just going to burn your lips, unless you have some like tape. You want to put some like gaffer tape on one side of it to stop burning your lips. Titanium is good, but I think it's too efficient? It's easy to burn stuff. So titanium's good if you're just going to heat water and things, but it's less good. You won't want a titanium frying pan. It would be a total disaster. Probably a good thing to always have is carry a flint and steel, like a light my fire, flint and steel. That's really handy. So you're basically fucked if you can't light your stove. And the flint and steel will work anywhere. It works in any temperatures, with gas or liquid fuel. you know, you could throw it in the water and it'll still work. Where lighters and matches and all those things can be a disaster. They can just stop working for no reason. They get damp or whatever. So hopefully that answered your question. But the main thing is, whatever stove you have, use it. You know, use it as much as you can to really, really kind of understand it. And make sure it's nice and clean when you're traveling with it. Like even think about putting like a little stick some tape on it and write like this is clean or something, just so the airport people know about it. So I had another question. It was about twist lock auto locking carabiners. Are they a good idea? And I would say yes. I think nearly all my, well, most of my sort of biggish carabiners are sort of twist lock ones, but they're, so Petzl call it like triac lock, and DMM, I think they call it, what do they call it? Lock safe, I think. So basically I'm not so keen on ones where you just turn it in one direction and then the carabiner opens, which is a, I think it's, is that a quick lock? Anyway, they have different names for these things. I mean, there's one where you just literally turn it, the carabiner opens. Like, I'm not so keen on those ones because I have seen where they can kind of, in certain ways, they can roll, the carabiner can get rolled and then the gate just opens, which can happen with a screw gate, but it's less likely to happen with a screw gate. But with a twist lock, with a two action twist lock, you have to push it down, then you have to twist it. But with a basic one, you just twist it and it opens. So a two direction one is really good. Probably the safest of those is like a ball lock kind of carabiner, which I think only Petzl make. We have to press down a little button and then you turn it and it opens. You can also get like, you know, you can get the BD ones with the magnets where you have to like press the sides and pull them open. I have had some of those. I don't like them for winter climbing so much, those kind of things. And in fact, I don't really use any of those kind of carabiners, twist locks, whatever, for winter climbing, because they're a bit heavier, but if you're abseiling and the carabiner's getting hot and whatever, and there's snow around, then you can get like the water can melt and get into the carabiner. So like, sometimes it can be quite hard to open them. It can be quite hard with a screw gate, but it can be a little bit harder with these other carabiners. They can just like freeze up. So, but for rock climbing and summer kind of climbing, I think they're really good. I think they're just safer. Because I find that you always, often with a screw gate, it's done up when you don't want it to be done up, and it's not done up when you want it to be done up. And they can easily, you know, ropes run across them, and there's loads of reasons. Also, you can't like over tighten them, which is probably the biggest advantage. You know, there's always that, you know, oh, I can't get my carabiner undone. Like that's generally caused more by using old carabiners, where so the classic thing is you're hanging on a belay with somebody and all their weight is on the carabiner, and they do it up a bit more. Like they go like, oh, the carabiner's not really done up, it's I'll do it up a bit more, and they like turn it another turn. And then when they take the weight off to leave the belay, they can't get it undone. And the reason is that when it was weighted, the carabiner actually flexed, so there's more space, and then they've tightened it, and when they've taken the weight off it, it's like gone back, tried to go back to it's unflexed, and it means that the gate is like jammed shut. Now most modern carabiners, you can't do that. Like if you notice a modern carabiner, if you get the gate as tight as you can, the screw gate as tight as you can, if you press it with your finger, there's still some movement and play in the gate, because it has like a stopper, where I think the olden carabiners, you could just keep tightening it as far as you can. You could get a wrench in there and tighten it. I have an experience of carabiners where it was like almost impossible to undo it. Where say you'd been attached to like a portal edge, and three people had been standing on the portal edge, and someone had over tightened it. And once you took your weight off the portal edge, there was no way you could like undo that carabiner. So I really like those kind of carabiners. They're very they're just safer. And the main carabiners I'm using at the moment like that is I always carry one like large carabiner. Sometimes carry two of those. I think mine's like a Petzl William kind of carabiner, and then I have quite a few small carabiners, and the ones I use is SMD carabiners from Petzl, which is like a small carabiner, and there I think I was just looking on the Petzl website. Oh yeah, I think that's just I think them. Yeah, the small D. That's just called a. It's just a twist lock on that one, but anyway, and they're quite good. And they have like a little hole in them as well, the carabiners, where you can put some cord through it. So they're quite good if you're using them with tib locks or whatever. You can actually tie the tib lock like into the carabiner. They're really good, little carabiners. What was that? I had another question. Well, a kind of weird question. Someone asked me about, I'm not a woman, not yet. Someone asked me about going away on trips with men if you're a woman, like random men who you know get in contact with you. That's kind of a tricky one. I think it wasn't just the fact. I think she was thinking that you might get raped and murdered, and that's probably not, unless you meet someone on UK climbing. I think men are men and women are women. I think it's quite good to make it plainly obvious that why you're going somewhere with someone is because you want to go climbing, and that's it. You're not in looking for love or whatever. And I say that because only from experience of like knowing lots of people who went on trips with each other, and of both sexes, as in the woman went on a trip with some guy and, you know, wanted to get with a guy, but generally the other way around, a guy goes climbing with a woman and he wants to get off with the woman or whatever. And it can lead to a great deal of, it can lead to like relationships and things, and people get on well, whatever. And often people are in their, are at their best when they're doing like difficult things, but then sometimes not, you know, sometimes this guy who thinks he's going to be like this amazing stud and is going to impress this woman he's invited on this trip can actually be a total loser. And the woman's like, you know, amazing, and it doesn't work out. But generally, people are their best and at their best when they're in nature and climbing, and you know, they don't have their mobile phones on and they don't have all that shit going on in their lives. So it's quite, you know, it's quite good. You know, if you were wanting to go on the perfect like blind date, then going on a trip with someone, unless it didn't turn out to be a total psychopath or an asshole, then it might be quite good. But I think with a lot of these things, like I know people who have gone on trips, like women, where they knew that the only reason they were going on this trip was that this guy basically fancied them, and they went anywhere. Like, I don't know, like I always said, don't do it. Like, it's going to create so much stress and whatever. But it's like that scene in Dumb and Dumber where the woman's like, look, there's a million, you know, the chance of us getting together is like a million to one. And the guy's like, you mean there's a chance? You know, it's that kind of thing. So yeah, but I think with a lot of these things, it's like He's like setting the great. It's like being speaking honestly to people and saying like, look, you know, I'd like to go on this trip with you, and we're going to sleep in separate tents, and you know, whatever, you know, like just like nothing's going to happen, you know. You know, just you know, if that's where you want me to go where with you, you know that's not going to happen. That's not how I do things. And probably you'd find where people probably lose interest. If that's why they're interested in going away with you, you know, then they're probably just going to lose interest and not contact you again. But also you got a thing like why is this random person I don't know want to go climbing with me? You know, like, yeah, you might be desperate for someone to go climbing with, but why, you know, why does this person contacting you to go climbing with you? Like, why do they not have anybody else they can go climbing with? Like, have they pissed everybody else off, or are they just using this as an excuse to go on like a, you know, like going on a, if you go on like a date with someone in a, you know, going have a meal with someone, that's bad enough. If they're not the right person, that's like excruciating enough. But going away for like a weekend climbing, that's like bloody horrendous. But going away for like, let's go to America and climb El Cap together, whatever, like, oh Christ almighty. So I think searching for, I've had quite a few questions about searching for people to go away with and climbing. Like, if you're a woman, you've got an advantage because there's more men, and the men are, you know, most of them are losers because they're climbers. You know, that's why we're getting climbing partners. But I think trying to find people to go climbing with who you know who aren't necessarily climbers is often a better way to do it. You know, if you go to a climbing wall or join like a climbing club, like climbing clubs aren't as bad as you'd think. They're often a very good way of like learning things, meeting people, even the point of joining a climbing club and getting involved and getting new members, so you get more people like you in the climbing club, is a good thing. Like I've only ever joined one climbing club. When I moved to Ireland, I joined like the IMC, which is Irish Mountaineering Club, just because I ended up like meeting loads of people in the IMC, and I really really like them. And for some reason I joined the club. I'm not sure why. It was like cheap. But yeah, so a club like that, like IMC, they do training, you know, they train people up, and you know, a lot of people with a lot of experience. You've got people who've like, you know, climbed all over the world, you know, been to some really amazing places. So, you know, that was really good. I think in the UK, a lot of clubs are really wary of doing any kind of training. I'm probably even wary about new members, you know, because everyone's terrified of being sued or whatever. But yeah, but clubs are quite a good way of doing it. And then at the climbing wall, the same thing, you know, just trying to talk to people, push yourself forward and try and, you know, most people, if you ask, can I go climbing with you? You know, are you going climbing at the weekend? You know, they'll kind of do it. So Vanessa's telling me I have to shut up now because she wants to go for a breakfast. So I guess that's it. I'll cover this in some more detail. But if you go and climb with someone, you number one thing is not about how good they are at climbing or even how safe they are. It's just if you get on with them, really. Like, it's not, you know, it's being a lot of like really really amazing climbers are probably just big assholes. Like, you don't want to hang out with them. And if someone's not really safe, you can always work around that. But if someone's just an asshole, you can't really work around that. You know, you might, you know, a lot of the time you might be like a rope length apart. You know, most of the time you're not. So that's it. So I'll try and get another podcast out, and not be so late next time. Ella, my daughter, was telling me off for being late. So I shall talk to you soon if we're also alive in a week's time. Okay, goodbye. I'm sorry. Someday. Where's I'm sorry.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.